You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to The Ballot, the podcast where the conversation begins. I'm your host, Ryan Eitze, and we are here discussing a very fascinating case, I think, over in the Japanese region, over in the Japan region of the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, Ballot. We are discussing Io Shirai, Io Sky. I think we'll have a discussion about what name we're going to lock in, because we can't do that the entire podcast. But I am joined by two individuals that once hosted a podcast here on the Countout Network. They have returned together. They have combined forces yet again to discuss one of their favorite wrestlers from Stardom, of course. Joining me, coming back from last year, coming back from every single Sunday on Ring Post Radio, Scotty Edwards. Scotty, how are you doing on this fine recording day?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me back. Thank you for giving me the call. I can't believe you got a hold of me.
You're so busy.
I'm so hard to find. But I'm excited, obviously, for this one. And we will be saying Io Shirai, by the way. I'm not even going to leave that one up to discussion. I never say Io Sky. I'm not going to start saying Io Sky. It's Io Shirai, especially because she's in the Japanese section of this, which is very exciting. But yeah, I'm very excited to talk about her case. I'm sure you can already tell where I'm going to be siding, but since I do get a vote, this is important.
This is an important discussion. And I was saying to our fellow guest, and I'll introduce you in a moment, but I was saying to our fellow guest, Scotty, that, you know, you came back, you did last year, you did the Cody Rhodes episode with me last year. And obviously when the ballots got announced of who's popping on, you saw Io Sky, Io Shirai, And you like basically messaged me, be like, "Oh, well, that's the one I'm doing." So you pinpoint this, and then about I want to say like a week ago, I was listening to old Stardom Road episodes because there's been a lot of episodes regarding Io Shirai and Stardom, obviously. And I was listening back, and I was just listening to you and your co-hosts on there. I was thinking to myself, I know he's taken a step back from internet activities, which I don't blame him. But I was thinking to myself, I think we can, the siren song of Shirai can wheel him back in, to reel him back into to podcasting. And that is why we are also joined here by Trent Brayward, all the way from the other side of the ocean. Brewerd, sorry. Screwed up a whole bit before we recorded, and now I've screwed up the last name. Trent Brewerd, thank you for joining us. Thank you for coming back onto the internet, grabbing the old microphone, and joining us to discuss Io Shirai.
I do like that of the two of us, Scott was the one who reacted to that mispronunciation. I didn't care, but it's good to be back on here. It's the first time doing any of the Ring Post Radio or the bracket stuff.
The bracket is a whole other podcast. It's a whole other
yeah.
thing.
I'm used to doing brackets and all these dumb kind of fun stuff, but yeah, this is very important. I've got to lock in because this is serious business. The Wrestling Observer ballot for the Hall of Fame and Io Shirai, and it is Io Shirai. Sky, because obviously I'm locked into Stardom and the Japanese scene. So even if I tried to say Io Sky, I would keep forgetting. I will be saying Io Shirai most times. But it's great to be back on the microphone and talking about one of the best wrestlers, if that does give away where my leanings might suggest.
Yeah, so thank you, of course, for joining us, both of you guys. We're talking about Io Shirai here today. Of course, you know, when she's got popped onto the ballot, at least for next year, there was some conversation where she's going to go, and I think pretty much immediately Dave Meltzer stated that she's going to go in the Japan region. Obviously, she could, you know, if she fell off for whatever reason in Japan, she might pop up in modern U.S. Canada, but it makes sense, I think, obviously, to go in Japan, because that is where the bulk of her career has been in. But obviously, I think the WWE of it all will boost it a lot for her. And that will also be a discussion for us today. But I'm excited to hear talk about the case of Io. I think it's a very interesting case in a lot of different ways, and I'm excited to talk about it. If you've never listened to The Ballot, and you don't know what the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame is or anything like that, very interesting way to get into the show. I want to go over real quickly the criteria, just to let's set the table a little bit here. For the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame is thus you need a combination of drawing power, being a great in-ring performer, or excelling in one's field in pro wrestling, as well as having historical significance in a positive manner. Candidates should have something to offer in all three of these categories mentioned, or be so outstanding in one or two that they deserve inclusion. Obviously, we'll also have the ballot, and at the end of I forgot to say this, Trent, as well. At the end of it, I'll send you guys both the Japan region. I'll have you guys pick on, you know, I forget how many votes are in Japan this year. I want to say 4 off the top of my head. Three actually. Who you would vote of those 3? So very interesting, especially in the Japan region. I'm glad that she is here, because after the sort of peak New Japan days of votes and candidates have all been kind of processed, and now we have like the Shingos and Shimas popping in and Ishiis. I think a lot of people believe that the Japan region, I believe this as well, the Japan region would be very open. And I think putting Io in the Japan region does her actually a lot of good favors. So I'm very interested to see how she's going to do eventually. But I'm very fascinated about her whole case, and that's what we're going to discuss here today. So I guess without further ado, I asked this of everyone on the ballot, and I'll start with you, Trent, since this is your first time on the ballot. It is a very simple, easy question that I know is going to have a lot packed in within it. Trent, what is your connection with Io Shirai?
Well, Io Shirai is one of the 3 women who got me into Joshi wrestling, but really got me into women's wrestling as a whole. Back in 2015, I was sort of a little bit lost when it came to pro wrestling. I was still very much in WWE-centric world. I'd started to dabble into, say, TNA and Ring of Honor and the American indie scene, but I wasn't really feeling fulfilled. And back in the forum days, which tells you how far back in the internet world we are back then, wasn't so much social media, but forums, I was seeing all this footage of these women's wrestlers over in Japan doing this incredible stuff I'd never seen. I came into pro wrestling through the Attitude Era, so my perception of women's wrestling was dastardly, to the point of like they just didn't really wrestle. They did other things in pro wrestling sphere. And seeing these women not only do stuff I'd never seen in pro wrestling, but do stuff to the level of, if not greater than most men's wrestling, completely changed my perception of what women's wrestling could be. And so, you know, for those who might be aware of what I do in the pro wrestling content sphere, or did, is probably the better way to look at it now, I focus purely on Joshi.
Soon to do.
Yeah, but maybe do more again in the future. Like, I was writing about Joshi, I was doing podcasting on Joshi. That was my focal point. And really, I can attribute all of that back to Mayu Iwatani, Kari Hojo, and primarily, really, back at that point, was seeing what Io Shirai was doing. She was doing moonstomp. She was doing 619s, these ridiculous suicide dives that had this kind of pace and veracity to it that you just didn't see in pro wrestling at that time. And, you know, it's one thing to see it just in gifts, but as you explored it in matches, it was like, okay, these aren't just one-off things, but it's through the course of a whole match too. And that just opened my eyes to a whole new world of pro wrestling that then consumed me for the next, really, a decade at that point now.
Scotty, same question for you. What is your connection to Io Shirai?
I mean, Io Shirai caught my eye the moment she stepped into WWE. She just was incredible from the word go. She did things that I've never seen before from a woman's wrestler. And I've said this many times since then. I think she's the most naturally talented wrestler I've ever seen. The way that she can perform, whether it be athleticism, high flying, speed, power, she has it all. And ultimately, she is the reason that I am doing what I'm doing. She led me down the path to stardom, despite already being in WWE. And obviously, as you know who I am, it's worked out pretty well. Obviously, I have gravitated towards one of the other three members a bit more, but I will always support and appreciate what Io Shirai has done in her career. She is someone that if you go back and watch her catalog, you will walk away being, I think, even more blown away from what she was doing back in stardom. And obviously now she is pretty much the only thing that makes me watch WWE consistently. If she's doing something, I'm watching it because she's still that good. I think in many ways she could even be better, but she's in WWE, so she doesn't have to be better. And she's one of my favorite wrestlers to talk about because, you know, a lot of people like, you know, Meltzer and some other people bring him up because it's kind of, you know, about his awards, but our Hall of Fame, I should say. But I love to bring her up because, you know, he's been recognizing her, especially lately, as like the best women's wrestler in America. And the funny thing is that that has been pretty consistent with a lot of people over the past couple of years. And she wasn't going 100% for most of it. Like, that's how great she is when it comes to her in-ring abilities. And yeah, I will always support Io. I think she's one of truly, you know, if there's a very, very small group of all-time greats, she's comfortably in it. And I think I'm kind of giving away what I'm going to be saying the rest of the show. But hey, if you know why you invited me, I'm not here to poo-poo on her parade. I'm here to celebrate what Io Shirai has done, is doing, and will continue to do moving forward.
Yeah, that I think both of those are really great perspectives, I think, for our audience. I think that comfortably moves us into the first criteria point, working ability, her wrestling ability. We can talk about her promos as well. But I think her wrestling ability is obviously like, I think, like, bar none for me. Obviously, it's subjective to everybody, but like, I think like that alone is like Hall of Fame level wrestling ability. You know, Dave even says as part of the criteria that if they're so great in one or two categories, they should deserve inclusion. And this is her wrestling ability is like so great on a top tier level that it is potentially enough for maybe swing voters of like, yeah, whenever you see her wrestle, she's freaking good. I know this might sound like a hot take, but Io Shirai is a really good wrestler. I think she is arguably, I think she's probably one of the best, if not the best, women's wrestler of the past 20 years. I think she's definitely within that conversation. She's one of the best wrestlers in the 2010s, even potentially. Obviously, and that's a big period in the Japanese area. I think she's in there. I mean, she even has 2016, 2017, 8th place and 10th place for most outstanding wrestler overall, right? You know, she does have some women's wrestling MVPs, 5th and 6th place in 2019 and 2020 when she's in WWE. But overall, throughout every wrestler in 2016, 2017, she's within top 10. And that also says something because this is obviously, as we talk about the drawing eventually, a small promotion by you know, standards. So being that big, that great of a wrestler to get that recognized on the big scale for these voters, I think is very big. She really reminds me, and this, I don't think this is a stretch, and I want to know what you guys think. She really reminds me of Kurt Angle. I think she has a lot more high-flying ability than Kurt Angle, but I think the immediate I think, Scotty, you said this, her natural wrestling ability showcases so well. Her intensity, I think there's a level of technique, I think, where Io has more high-flying. Kurt Angle obviously has more technical skill. I think the only big difference I can think of between the two is that Io Shirai has a five-star match and Kurt Angle doesn't. And that's a fun little bit I've had prepped to the canon for the past week. So I think she's legitimately one, like, one of the best women's wrestlers, arguably one of the best wrestlers of the past 20 years, potentially. That's a very elite class of people. So yeah, I think she's legitimately a great wrestler. I know what you guys think, but I'm going to ask anyways. Trent, what do you think of old Io Shirai as a wrestler?
Well, I don't just want to come with my opinion. I want to come from the source of this whole Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. I'm going to quote Dave Meltzer. Back in 2016, so we're cutting off over half of her career, back in the April 6th Wrestling Observer newsletter edition that he released, he referred to her, along with Kairi and Mayu, as one of the best wrestlers, not women's, one of the best wrestlers in the world, when referring to them joining Lucha Underground for some tapings. Now, this is in April of 2016. So when you're looking at the Io Shirai timeline, this is like just a few months into her second red belt run. So for those of you who know Io Shirai, that's the legendary record-breaking red belt run, which most people know Io in Stardom for. Most of her best matches in Stardom come from this period or just around this period. So you're cutting off both of her big Mayu matches from that year, a lot of her Kairi stuff, a lot of her Kagetsu stuff, some of her Jungle matches. I've got to mention Jungle Kiona, and a lot of like the big stuff that Io Shirai is known for, along with all of her WWE stuff. So if she's being recognized by Dave Meltzer, who's running this Hall of Fame, you know, situation, as one of the best wrestlers in the world at that point, and you've got the whole second half of her career, I think that's a pretty good basis in terms of just her in-ring ability. Scott mentioning her as one of the most...
If I'm not mistaken, yeah. Also during that run, wasn't she injured for a good portion of it?
Especially towards the latter half. You would
I know
see
that
her
to a lot of wrestlers, to, but still.
Yeah, she was picking up injuries. And around that time is when WWE started to take notice and tried to bring her on board. When she dropped the belt to Mayu, she was going to then move on to WWE. And then that was when they rejected her the first time because of the concerns about her neck and her heart. And then they kind of were like, actually, you're too good to just say no to because of that, and then took her anyways.
Which
and
says something about her wrestling ability, right?
And it turned out to be a pretty good decision looking at her in 2025 doing what she's doing. Yeah, the risks paid off. But yeah, like she was hampered towards the second half of that, and you know, she was still putting on incredible matches. She was carrying that company on its back, and we'll talk about that more in some of the other points of discussion, but just in pure wrestling ability, Scott says it perfectly. There's not really many wrestlers you'd say were better naturally gifted in the ring in terms of high-flying. Yeah, maybe only Manami Toyota was better in terms of women's wrestlers, but she also has an incredible and underrated power game, because for as all the high-flying stuff she can do, she's doing deadlift Germans and then, you know, rotating and doing them again. She's pulling deadlift German suplexes on Viper / Piper Niven, which is not an easy thing for anyone to do. Yeah, she's also got an underrated striking game that she doesn't pull out as much because she's so good at the technical, the high-flying, at the power game. She can do everything. It's just she's so known for the high-flying stuff because she is known as the genius of the sky. She's incredibly well-rounded. She excels in all those areas. Yeah, she would have more five-star matches, I think, if Dave Meltzer's scale was attuned to current levels back when she was at her true peak. And the other thing that should be noted in terms of her wrestling ability is she's managed to adapt from the Japanese style that we saw in Stardom 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018 to a WWE style and excelled in both areas. But she never lost the Japanese style, which is proven last year. Yeah. She rocks up to Marigold, hasn't wrestled the Japanese style. And then everyone who never saw her in Japan suddenly was like, where's this version of Io Shirai or Io Sky been? When they saw her just blast Utami Hayashishita the way she did. People hadn't seen her wrestle like that. She always had that in her. She had that extra gear, and hopefully we get to see more of it down the track, because that is the true version of Io Shirai.
Yeah, just phenomenal. I think obviously that WWE style, I think also, I guess, coming with age is a weird thing of someone in their 30s. But, you know, I think the high flying is probably de-escalated a little bit in the WWE style. But then you just see more of the striking game and more of the her power game as well. So I think just like, yeah, she's really great. She's a great almost all-rounder, if you want to. Scotty, I know what you think. What do you think about her Io Shirai's wrestling ability?
Yeah, she's a five-tool player. For those who like baseball, that's the best thing to give her the compliment of. You know, there's a reason that she was put into the position that she was in Stardom and now in WWE. I see people legitimately calling her the ace of the WWE when it comes from an in-ring standpoint. This is WWE, remember. I don't know if anyone remembers. Biggest company in the world. And we're calling Io that. Yeah, I mean, Trent, you know, hit a lot of my points, obviously, because, you know, me and him have done these podcasts forever. I know how he feels about Io. I've read his stuff about Io. I don't need to repeat too much, but what I will say is that when you look at her catalog, it's not just against one wrestler. It's not against two wrestlers. It's not against three wrestlers. For many, many, many wrestlers, and this is something I'll use to support Mayu somewhere down the road as well, she is their best match. That is what Io does for people, is have their best match. I always feel like anytime that someone's like, oh, you know, I literally did this week, because obviously Mako Satomura has just retired, and I asked people, what's your favorite match of hers? And it's Io Shirai. Mako Satomura, of all people. Mako Satomura has had matches with Akira Hokuto, Aja Kong. The list goes on and on and on. Like, legendary matches. And so many people will pick the Io match. Like, that should tell you all you need to know about Io. There's just something when you watch her, you're amazed. She's also one of the first women to have a five-star match at WrestleMania. So that'll do a nice little respect for her as well, I'm sure. And in many ways, I think what supports her is they put her in that match to do that. That is why she was placed there. Obviously, she's gotten super popular and things like that, but they wanted to elevate that match with the likes of Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair, two people that many would consider bigger stars than her in the WWE sphere, and yet she was the one that was getting the loudest pops, the loudest cheers, and walking away as champion. I mean, again, I think what Trent did really good at was hit on the past and what she was doing in Stardom, and even when she was banged up, even when she was broken down, she was still having classics. And that's just a credit to what she was able to do. She was always able to change her game, whether it be against Viper, whether it be against Mako Satomura, Mayu Iwatani, Kairi Hojo, whatever it was, she always could adapt. And I think the best type of wrestlers, ones that can adapt. You know, I look at her catalog and I'm always amazed. And I think one of my favorite things is, like Trent said, had Dave been rating the way he's been rating, there would be a lot more. I also think if Dave just watched more, there would be more.
Sure.
Right. I think, and that would be more eyes on the product overall, right? That is kind of the natural thing. But when we talk about drawing power, I think the most natural thing will be bringing eyes to products. That is what she does. But not to jump ahead, but yeah, when it comes to her wrestling, it's just unbelievable how many matches she had that, you know, you put in terms of the best in Stardom's history, and now she's doing so as some of the best women's matches in WWE history. So I can't say enough good things about what she brings in ring, because it's so easy for her that it's unfair.
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair point. And just to reveal a little bit of the curtain, this month was originally, I had a different idea of a different wrestler, and trying to, you know, book guests and whatnot. And then the WrestleMania match happened and I messaged Scotty and being like, no, we should just do Io Shirai. It's like, oh yeah, let's, you know, a little bit of like, you know, catch that sweep, maybe a little bit delayed probably. But I was just like, let's just go right ahead and talk about Io Shirai. Yeah, just a legitimately great wrestler. I think that's a great point of like the transition to WWE has been really great for her. And the fact that in WWE, I think it's fair to say that she's easily, I don't know about easily. I think Bianca Belair is also very good. very great. But I think that she's probably the best women's wrestler in the company right now. And I think there's the conversation about, is she the best wrestler in the company right now? And I think, depending on the WWE fan, I think some could argue yes. Some would argue Roman Reigns. And I think that's for different reasons. Nevertheless, I think Io Shirai has made that transition really great. And I think that, you know, that's the same thing for like, for me personally, that's the same thing for like a guy kind of like Gunther, who's taken that very like European, almost like strong style-ish-esque European, right? Style and transition that nicely into the WWE version of it, right? The WWE box version of that. And I think Io Shirai is on that same plane for me. Trent, I wanted to ask you because, you know, I was listening back to old episodes of Stardom Road. And I was listening to you talk about the Mayu and Io Shirai feud. And a lot of that was based off of her promo ability. And obviously, I don't actually know if you speak Japanese, Trent. I know Scotty doesn't. But I wanted to talk real quickly, just mention her promo ability. I think obviously for us English speakers, it's always going to be not disparity is not the right word, but that sort of like idea of like, there's always going to be something that we can't quite grasp. Mm. But, you know, luckily Stardom, because of they would always upload later, they would always put in subtitles as well. So I think there's a certain ability of telling the story of what is happening in Stardom. And so I wanted to talk to you, Trent, just like real quickly, what do you think about her promo ability and the way she's telling stories? Because, I mean, personally, Scotty, you also might agree with me here. Trent, I don't know how much WWE you watch, but I don't necessarily feel like she gets a whole lot of that in WWE. I can't really think of any prime examples of that in WWE, but I know there are more prime examples of that in Stardom.
I will just say, in terms of WWE, they do. She's like the first person that started to get the like cinematic promo where she speaks in Japanese, but they put the subtitles. And I think that's obviously not to say one thing or the other, but I know that those get a lot of praise when they happen. So that's just a supportive nature. But yeah, I'll let Trent talk about her Stardom stuff, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's recognizing, like, it's growing the WWE in the global perspective of, like, instead of forcing everyone into a box of having to speak English and, you know, working to their weaknesses, it's a very Paul Heyman kind of way of thinking, where it's like, let's work to their strengths. You know, Japanese is a very passionate way of speaking when they get going. Like, people would always praise when Asuka would get firing in her Japanese speech, but when she has to be forward into a box and speak English, it restricts her. And I think they realize with Io Shirai, or Io Sky in WWE, like there's value in having her speak naturally in Japanese. As comfortable as she might be in English in certain ways, it's just different with it in a wrestling promo. When it comes to Stardom, look, I don't speak Japanese outside of a couple of words. Thankfully, especially back then, all the promos were English subtitled, so it does make it easier to follow along. And obviously, you're working with translations, so it's not one-to-one perfect. But along with the way they speak, you can kind of get a feel for it along with crowd reactions, which at the end of the day, even if you can't work things out perfectly, if the crowds are reacting and they're the domestic fans, they're the ones that are buying the tickets and stuff, you can work off that. And, you know, Io always got the crowd going and reacting, and especially when she was working with an actual meaty storyline and trying to get the crowd reacting, it always worked well. Really, the only time Io tried to get the crowd going a certain way and it failed was during her heel turn, and that was because the fans wanted to cheer her. And she tried to do heelish things, and they were like, I don't care, you're the best, we're cheering you. And especially in Japan, where, you know, in a smaller company, you're still trying to sell merchandise, there's a line they just, especially back then, they weren't really willing to cross, because at the end of the day, they want to make money with merch. So you're not going to go full heel. It was always like three quarters heel. So EO, they kind of realized very quickly, look, we can't turn her full heel. We're just going to settle for tweener. But outside of that, I thought her promo ability was good. I will say she wasn't the top tier promos. Like, I think nowadays you see some wrestlers are maybe better promos than her, just in terms of getting creative reactions. Like, I think Julia was better in the ring with promos, but I thought she was good. And I think she's also found a good niche. Again, I don't follow WWE brilliantly, but when an Io Shirai promo is uploaded, I do like to watch that. And I think she's found a really good groove in WWE when she's allowed to speak Japanese. She's found what works in their system, you know, the fiery promos and really leaning into her accent because she's allowed to, because she knows it's going to get subtitled. So it doesn't have to be picture perfect clear. She doesn't have to try and work with, you know, being totally with clarity. She can lean in and have fun with it. And I think that's really works. The crowd seems to respond to that well. And that's allowed her a bit of freedom as well. So I think, yeah, the promos, it's not going to work to the extent of the in-ring stuff, but it complements well enough.
Mm-hmm. Scotty, do you have any additional thoughts on her promo ability, her storytelling ability?
I will add from the WWE aspect as someone who's kind of especially watched her run recently, because I think that's kind of the most important. You watch what she does and how she acts, and it feels like anytime she actually does get to speak, the crowd's into it, whether it be in Japanese or her best English. I think they are always into what she is doing, and charisma carries her a lot. That's always been something that just naturally will carry her, because she is one of the most charismatic wrestlers you'll see, right? Like, for her, she doesn't need to say a lot for it to be impactful in WWE. She doesn't need to say a lot even in Japan for it to matter, right? When you see like the likes of, and this is not a shot, but when you see Tam Nakano, for example, she is explaining her story, right? She is going to talk a lot. When you see Starlight Kid, for example, she talks a lot. Like, she goes on and on and on. But like, that's how certain people promote. Io doesn't need to do that. Her best work is just telling that Mayu story. And if you watch the post matches, that's probably your best bet to find those. She always was, you know, pretty simple in her pre-match promos, which I know not most people may know about those anymore, but those were a thing once upon a time. And I think with Io, like, yeah, you're never going to write home about her for the promos, but you don't have to. But if you, obviously, since it's a section here, she does a good job. And like I said, her charisma will carry her, whether it be in Stardom or WWE, where she's doing it now.
Yeah.
Also, it seems like she's, again, not someone who follows WWE. It seems like she's gotten a finger point pose over there really well. Like, whenever I see her commented on, everyone's doing like the emoji stuff. So that's good on her as well there. Like, that's not always easy to do.
No, she's gotten that over big time.
Yeah, I think that I said this on Ring Post Radio a little while ago of like the sort of failed heel turn thing, and just in general of how things are done. I think, you know, and how that was done for the Mayu feud was very nice, but like being unable to turn the crowd, that it does like almost take away some aspects of her storytelling promo ability. But at the same time, it's like, well, like, she's not like a bad promo or anything. It's just like, that's not great, but it's like she's so charismatic and so likable. Yeah. I think overall, just her,
especially at that time,
overall personality, of course, but like also especially the wrestling ability. Like, she is more of a natural babyface than anything else, and it's really hard based on her wrestling to not cheer for that person. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, I think good is a good place to land on that, but
for sure, like, and
good.
Well, for what it's worth, I mean, she got over in WWE becoming heel. So that aids her in that respect, right? Like, she actually wasn't super duper over. Then she went Joshi Judas, and look at her now, right? Now she can be that baby face that we saw in Japan more so, but it had to take time over there rather than in Japan, where everyone would love her no matter what she did.
Mm-hmm. Or rather, someone that is kind of an import into the U.S., you know, into the NXT scene, probably that separation helps. Trent, you were going to say something?
You know, that was exactly what I was going to say. Like, with Stardom, she was just so over and she was so popular that trying to turn her heel without going full on over the top is difficult. With WWE, like, they had a bit more room to maneuver with that. and it worked. And we got to see her as a heel, as a proper heel, and it worked. And that's how she got over. And now we're at the point now where she got an over as a heel, and she can work both sides really well within the WWE system. And it's opened up her character a lot more, because when she came into WWE, it was a little bit generic face. I don't think they really knew how to play her character properly. And now there's a lot more freedom in finding that version of her.
That's very true. Well, I ultimately think her wrestling ability is like a slam dunk category for her. Like, I think, like I said at the top, I think that's like arguably Hall of Fame level in its own right. I think that's a slam dunk category. And so I think, to me, that's easily her best category in any of these things. Let's move into drawing. To me, I think this is possibly her weakest category. I think that is fair to say, just because there's a lot of different aspects of this, right? It is, she is extremely pushed, obviously, in Stardom, but it's also a very small company, especially during her run. Obviously, since the pandemic, it has exploded in attendance, but it's during her run, it's an incredibly small company. You know, practically doing like sort of indie level numbers for other, you know, Japanese promotions. So that is, you know, I don't think you're never going to get Hall of Fame level drawing case at all. So I think if anything, we're going to have a discussion of draw or not. So I think that's kind of where we're at. Trent, what do you think? How do you think? I'm gonna hold my cards to the chest a little bit here, because I have a lot of thoughts on this. I did a lot of research on this. But Trent, what do you think about her drawing ability when it comes to Io Shirai?
Yeah, I think it's definitely difficult if you're trying to make a hard and fast argument that she is a massive draw in relation to Hall of Fame levels on just a pure numbers level. I think there's a lot of context they have to put into it, because Joshi in the 2010s, especially early 2010s, was really struggling, you know, coming out of the dark ages after All Japan and Gaism and all the success that they had. It was very much a fledgling situation. And I think where you would be making the argument for Io Shirai around this period is not so much just in pure numbers, but in the foundational work that she was laying and setting up Joshi for the future, which is a little bit in the legacy aspect, but I think also just in the drawing and setting things up is also valuable in the second period as well, because all of the success Joshi had during these early to mid 2010s, a lot of it can be pointed as Io being the headline and main attraction. And also in how Rossi Ogawa, as the booker for Stardom, consistently went to her to lead Stardom whenever they needed a push. So she was the first person they went to when Nanai Takahashi dropped the belt. They put it on Alpha Female, but she was the first person who actually had the belt for any length of time. They trusted her to lead the company. Then after the Ghastly match and they needed someone to really lead Stardom forward in after 2015, they put the belt on her. When Mayu Iwatani got injured, Toni Storm had the red belt and wasn't going to be there all the time because she was running around the world and wasn't going to be in Japan. They needed someone to be the de facto top champion. They put the white belt on her. So anytime Stardom needed someone to be the ace at the front of the line, they were putting the belt on her, because they knew that in terms of Joshi, in terms of Stardom, she was the best draw that they had. So I think in that respect, that's sort of an example that, you know, in the context of Joshi in the 2010s, especially early to mid, she was the best draw that they had. She was bringing a lot of eyes, and especially international, to Stardom around that time. You know, we look at sort of growth periods for Joshi for Westerners coming in. The big name would be Hana Kimura. The big period was sort of in that COVID, as you mentioned, Shuri and Utami. Nowadays, with like Tam and Sai Kamitani. The first big growth for Stardom was the Threedom. Yeah, it's people like myself coming across GIFs and early matches. It was people discovering Lucha Underground and going, who are these three women wrestling Penta in a intergender match? And of those three women, it was generally Io Shirai getting the most attention. Now, I, like Scott, and became the Mayu Iwatani fan. She was always my favorite. But it was Io Shirai who drew a lot of attention initially. So while the hard and fast numbers, like you look at Stardom now drawing 7,000 people at Yokohama Arena, Stardom might not have been doing that in 2014. It just, the Joshi environment wasn't there for that. You could have had Aja Kong in her peak in 2014, just Joshi wouldn't have drawn those numbers. I think in the environment, the context of the early to mid 2010s, Io Shirai was as good as you could have asked for. And now she's doing great things in WWE. She might not be their number one women's draw, but she's pushed herself into that conversation. They're entrusting the top women's championship with her and having her win at WrestleMania and having those big matches. She's not just a mid-card player, despite the limitations of the language barrier. They're entrusting her with big spots. So, yeah, it's not the strongest case. It's not her best of the three, but it's no awkward, you know, forgettable character category. I think she's done pretty well, all things considered.
Scotty, I know for a fact I shared the link with you of the sheer amount of research I've done. Before I say anything about that, do you have any thoughts about her drawing ability?
I always look at drawing differently from other people, so I'll explain that. But like, for me, drawing is making people watch. That doesn't need to necessarily just be in the building. That is make people pay attention. And I think for years, Io has been someone that makes people watch. I watched her literally a year ago make people watch Marigold Summer Destiny 2024. Over 3 million for a company that was 3 months in, 4 months in. Like, again, drawing is never going to be her top thing. At the end of the day, it's going to be her wrestling and probably her legacy more than anything that will drive her in this Hall of Fame conversation. But as Trent said, and as I talked to you about this week, trying to judge attendance numbers during really most of her, if not all of her peak in Japan, is really difficult, because Stardom was ultimately what built Joshi back up in Japan. But it was not overnight. It was not in a day. And so many times when she had to take over, it was after something that really started to slow things down. Whether that was Yuzuki Aikawa retiring, I think that is an important part to bring this up because of the number she helped do for Stardom, many of her moments. And once she went away, it's like, okay, now we have to make a new star. And Io was not a star at that time. And then, of course, like you said, following the Yoshiko Akita Asakawa stuff, they obviously went to Mako to then go to the legendary reign of Io. I know you're going to throw a bunch of numbers here and yada, 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 whatever. That's what you do. That's your job. That's why you run the show. And I'm not even saying like this should be the reason she gets in. But as someone who, you know, follows enough to know where Joshi was, she'll never get the full respect for where she got it because she was gone by the time Stardom blew up. But let's just say this: had Bushiroad had the chance to have Io Shirai, numbers would have been booming either way, probably, but they would have maybe been even higher because of what she was. But all right, bring your numbers, Ryan.
Well, it's like to that point you were saying there, I think that's, if anything, that's a separate conversation about like Rossi a little bit as well.
Yeah. And I just meant to also say, like, she brought eyes to Stardom worldwide. She made people watch, like Trent just said it. I've just said it. Like, we got there because of her. And again, that's not going to support her enough because people are going to look at numbers and attendance and all that. But I do think when it comes to a company that's not New Japan Pro Wrestling, that stuff matters.
Sure.
Right. People heard about New Japan Pro Wrestling through a lot of different things. For Stardom, it was like, oh, I saw this clip of Io Shirai. I need to go see who this is. Or for my instance, she pushed me to Stardom because of being in WWE and what she was putting on each and every day. So I always think that's the fascinating thing with drawing, is most people just look at numbers, and rightfully so. I understand that is the way, but I think in this newer age, those things should be looked at as well, because it's just as important. But Ryan, I will let you go.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, if to make the case for numbers is that, you know, I think you're right. I think there is a broader conversation about, especially I think when it comes to like modern US wrestling, especially where, you know, just looking at, you know, WWE and AEW, where the money is made in TV ratings, you know, sure, there's a broader conversation to be had about in terms of drawing ability when it comes to television, especially where that is your bread and butter for that, those sort of things. I think in a large way, voters don't necessarily know how to do that, especially when like so much of the Hall of Fame has been, you know, for decades, you know, for all these wrestlers have been based on attendances. So I think that's, you know, that's a very valid point, and I think it's a very valid conversation.
It's why I didn't bring her up, WWE stuff up, because like that doesn't matter anymore unless you are the Roman Reigns of the company, I guess. Like that, otherwise you're part of the wheel.
Yeah,
it works for both big companies in America.
Yeah, but to make the case for the numbers and the attendances, that is still the fact of, sure, of we course. Can look at these sort of things. There are WWE
brother.
Yeah, there are WWE things we can give to her. She semi-main evented WrestleMania Night One. Was that 2024? You know, versus Bayley. Again, those are the sort of things of, it's WrestleMania. How much, you know, that gets sold out months in advance? How much you're gonna, you know, give that out? She in a Money in the Bank ladder match, but semi-main evented Money in the Bank 2024. She technically was a semi-main event in a four-way on, I believe, the highest attended NXT TakeOver during her time. But again, that's, you know, fatal four-way. She's 25% of a semi-main event. She also, you know, then she has, I think the next pay-per-view, it's like a 6,000 attended thing. So that's not that great. And then her entitled like title run is pandemic in NXT. So you kind of just, you kind of just got to throw all that away. That kind of stinks for her. But when it comes to Stardom, like I think, you know, looking at, I did a bunch of research. I'll have a link to it in the thing. Trent, I don't know if Scotty sent you that link. But I did a bunch of research. I practically did 12 years of data, 10 years of data on Stardom's attendance. And I got all the way up to, and hopefully by the time this episode is released, I'll have caught up to at least 2023. But I did basically go through all of 2011, 2018, put in who main evented and semi-main evented to try to create like, okay, who are some of the top draws in Stardom? And I think Io Shirai, she's the top draw for several years. I got her at 2011, 2013, 2014, 2016, 2017, and of course, 2018. That is pretty much her entire reign, right? Her entire length of her time there. That is what? 6 years out of nine, eight, seven, some math.
Come on, man. You're the math guy right now.
I fall apart at the time. And, you know, after filtering some numbers down, I have her as a top 10 draw in Stardom during her time there. And I think that's very fair. That being said, I think the to say that she is a top 10 draw in Stardom, I think is very accurate and very fair. I say it's very accurate because I look at the numbers. And if my math is wrong, then ignore the accuracy. But the fact that Stardom remained a small company, and especially I think during the latter half of her time there, 2016, 2017, 2018, you know, you can start seeing like average attendances start dipping down a little bit. That there is concern for me about her drawing ability, because a lot of that is also obviously during her year plus long reign as World of Stardom champion. So if you say someone is a top draw in the company, but the business for the company starts decreasing, that to me equals a someone that she might not be a overall draw, right? If she's a bigger draw, they could do bigger buildings during her time and all these sort of things. I think there's some counterpoints to that argument that I'm making. I think saying that Joshi Wrestling was in a really bad state and she's kind of used as sort of the damning of the flood, if you will, I think it's a fair counterpoint.
Many times.
Yeah, I think it's a fair counterpoint. I think by time like 2016, 2017, when this company is like 5, 6, 7 years into its run, I think you can contribute less of Joshi's state prior to Stardom to that latter half. But her as like a damn thing, I think that's there's some fairness. But even then, like a damn is not really like a Hall of Fame level case. Keeping the lights on is not really a Hall of Fame level case, especially when I'm saying that like I think that you can see the trends of businesses start going down there in time. I think a stronger counterpoint, and I think there is an obvious example nowadays with the WWE AEW attendance numbers, is that 2016, 2017, 2018, this is when New Japan is popping off big time. And I think that, right. You know, if you want to do that comparison to modern day, one of the reasons, you know, there's many reasons why AEW's attendance start going down. But one of the reasons is WWE starts getting super hot. It is... I don't necessarily think in wrestling, what's the phrase? Like when a water rises, it raises all ships. That doesn't necessarily apply to wrestling. That's not really applying in modern US right now. And I think you can make an argument of that not really doing a thing in 2016, 2017 during the height of New Japan, which to what then again goes back to she is maybe the dam trying to keep all this.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ever feel like your blanket just can't keep up with you or the weather? Introducing the all-season Miki Couture Everywhere Blanket. Whether you're at the beach, on a hike, or cozying up around the fire pit, the Miki Couture Everywhere Blanket is your perfect companion. This new hooded blanket is super soft, ultra-portable, and stylish, too. It offers luxury comfort and warmth that goes wherever you go. Get your new Miki Couture Everywhere Blanket today. Available now in stores and online at MikiCouture.com.
Stuff together to keep the lights on. But again, that is like, you know, how much can you argue, you know, all these sort of things. That's definitely not Hall of Fame level draw. I think at best she is solid enough. I think at worst you can maybe make an argument for not being a draw, seeing that the business goes down for, you know, for stardom around her. We said this on Ring Post Radio recently, Scotty, that like Tam Nakano is like easily a draw, like undoubtedly a draw.
Oh yeah, she's the biggest draw in Joshi since really All Japan Women's.
It's since All Japan Women. I was gonna stop you and interrupt and say Stardom, but yeah, All Japan Women is probably a more apt example. When Tam Nakano eventually goes on the ballot, she's gonna have a radically different conversation when it comes to drawing, because it's like. Look how it's exploding for her.
She may have invented all their biggest shows.
Exactly. And it may have invented 7,000.
Now
70. Hold on. We'll hold a conversation.
Obviously, this isn't a 10.
That's some Hulk Hogan numbers, brother.
Yeah. This isn't a Tam Nakano conversation, but like the difference is also Bushiroad and the backing there and what that changed for them as a whole, right?
There is so much of that confounds me, and that is like a whole another conversation in regards to Rossi Ogawa, who's obviously also on the ballot. But there's like so much of that for me where it's like, you have the best wrestler, arguably of the 2010s, on your promotion. Why is your company not hotter? Why are your attendance?
Oh, I can tell you why.
Please.
The roster got drained every year. It was something new every year. You know, if you look at those cards, they're not exciting all the time. You look at the title reign, it's aided by a lot of names you may have never heard of.
And also not only that, but like a lot of imports from like the UK, European scene.
Right. There was a lot of, when I say draining, it's because of retirements. It's because of wrestlers not being around. That was consistent through that's been consistent through this genre of the sport to begin with, you know. And it's really showing its face now again this year for the first time in a while, where I don't think the whole scene is supported enough to make it worth it for a lot of wrestlers. And back then that was the case too. So while you had her at the top and you had, you know, a handful of others, that undercard became rookies and new wrestlers more than anything. And I do think that's part of it, right? It's like, you can only build so much with what you're given. Yeah. And when people are disappearing, whether it be getting signed, retiring, mostly retiring, that was a consistent one. It changed a lot of things, because had Yuzuki Aikawa wrestled for 5, 6, 7 years, this is a vastly different conversation. But she wrestled for 2 and then was gone. So that is the thing with Stardom, and it's why, like, if you talk about Rossi's case, it's so fascinating. And there's a great article about that on Voices of Wrestling to kind of get a full appreciation. And we did that on Stardom Road, so if you want to hear that, go check that out. We really dug into Rossi's gate. But that's something that I think people will ignore when it comes to Stardom. It's like, yes, there was Io. Yes, there was Mayu, who was being built up at the time.
Sure.
And then, yeah, exactly. That was it. And then who? Like, Tam, by the time Tam was there, you know, Io was leaving pretty much, like, well, the first time. And the list goes on and on, right? It's like, that's all part of it. And that's the difficulty of talking Stardom.
Yeah.
As a Hall of Fame aspect pre Bushiroad, because it was so different back then. Because, like you said, it wasn't indie, and the scene as a whole was not as healthy enough to support these wrestlers who, you know, have to live. They have to live their lives.
Trent, I know you're champion of the people. Real quickly, I have, like, Yuzuki Aikawa. I nail names. Thank you. I nail names all perfectly. I have, like, a top 3 draw of Stardom.
Color Yuzupon. Yeah.
Yes, as a thing. Trent, go ahead.
I was just going to say, people look at, like, the 2016 cards and they see Momo Watanabe, Azumi, Starlight Kid, Jungle Kiona, Kagetsu, and this sort of thing. Oh, this was a good, strong period of Stardom. They were all rookies. They were all, like, children. 14, 15, 16
Momo
years old.
Wanted,
like,
to beat Io for the Wonder title to bring to her high school graduation.
Exactly. Like, they are all still in high school. Hanan was, like, you know, doesn't look like the Hanan she was now.
She was a literal child.
Yeah, like, Rina and Hina, like, are still, like, probably learning how to walk.
They're still children now.
Yeah, like, it's, you can't look at the 2016 roster and compare it to the 2024 roster. And sure. Yeah, like, the reality is Bushiroad bought Stardom based on the work that Io put in and Yumayu's and stuff. Like, yes, the drawing wasn't good and you can put it on the top champion, but when you've only really got 2-3 people with any kind of experience, like, there's only so much you can ask of them.
Sure.
Yeah. The reality is the numbers weren't as strong as they could have been, but, like, you're asking an awful lot of them to do in that situation. And yeah, when Bushiroad takes over and Tam's able to draw 7,000 people, it's because of the work that had gone in 10 years prior.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is a Hall of Fame drawing discussion, right? Like, you know, I might be a little hard, but it is the thing of, like, we're talking Hall of Fame here.
You gotta put some pushback in.
Sure.
And that's why we're here, to give the scope of where it was at, though. That's why you asked us to, right? Because, like, from the outside looking in, there's gonna be a lot of voters that just look at, like, random 2016 Cork and Hall and be like, why is this only 900 or whatever? And it's like, okay, let's look at their roster, and you're gonna see, like Trent said, oh, it has Azumi and Hazuki. They were not nothing, but they weren't established back then, right? And and again, like, for as much grief as Mr. Ogawa gets these days, his best case will always be he made so many starts, and that's why Stardom is where it is now, because there were so many stars. But yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the right show if you weren't giving the stats and facts like that. And that, and again, that's the fascinating time to talk this company, because they're going through that finally for the first time, it feels like, since 2020 now in Bushiroad. And it's going to be fascinating to see like how they bounce back. But they have a lot more roster now, and like the roster wasn't big, like the core roster was not a big roster like it is now. And that's part of
the reason, you know, why there are so many imports. Right.
They weren't funded by anyone besides ticket sales and one guy. So it's like that's also the fascinating part of it all. But that's the beauty of the conversation too, because while we Trent and I will, you know, obviously support EO for the work she put in, you know, there's still numbers, and Ryan's coming from it at it from the side of what most people will come at it from. Yeah. It's like, yeah, they don't know what was going on in terms of the wrestlers who left, and a lot of them probably will look past, you know, the Yoshiko Axe stuff and Yuzapon and all these different things. So that's why we're here, you know, before you vote, to help you. You're welcome.
Yeah, I have like Yoshiku and Act, like also a top 10 draw. I have, like, if you want to go like that 2016, 2017, 18 area, I have Tony Storm as also a top 10 draw, which I'm sure will be brought up later for a Tony Storm Hall of Fame ballot discussion. I think like if you want someone close to that time period as well, that's more core roster. Below EO, I have like Kagetsu, not like, you know, little names down, yeah, but Kagetsu, Kairi as well, I guess you can also maybe say.
Right. You can be a pretty big draw if you're only there for Korokins.
Yeah. A little farther down is Mayu as yeah, well. So, yeah, I think that's like a very fair thing of like she really had no one else. And there were a lot of bigger draws at the start, yeah, in that like 2011 to 2013, 14 area. Yeah. And then that latter transition, like, just everyone started leaving and everyone, you know, started doing a thing. That's not great. I mean, obviously it's like, I think it's one of those things of like, you know, one person can't lift an entire thing, but nevertheless, numbers, you know, number wise, it's like,
right,
it's not ideal. And also this is a small promotion, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's not just that they left. It's when you have something like the Akiyatakawa Yoshiko incident that puts a sour taste in a lot of fans' mouths, and you know that can affect whether people
still
want to stick around. Yeah, yeah, it affects whether people want to keep following a company, even if they have wrestlers that they want to support there.
Mm-hmm. That's all very fair. All right, let's move on. If we don't have any other conversations about drawing power, which I think we're wrapped up here, let's talk about historical significance. I think for me, this is a very interesting area, because I think this is a conversation, a twofold conversation. I think there is obviously a legacy conversation that is obviously still developing for Io Shirai, Io Sky. But because she is what I would consider the first like true stardom talent on the ballot, this also almost becomes a conversation of historical significance for stardom as a promotion, right?
Yeah.
You know, a common thing across the Wrestling Observer ballot are, you know, places like Ring of Honor and TNA, where they're real. If you know, of a lot of cases of those from those companies, a lot of people that are in the Hall of Fame. Samoa Joe is a good example. He's on the ballot. I think he's growing to a certain degree, but he's fallen off several times, and that is partly because his case is in a smaller promotion, right? Mm-hmm. That I guess people aren't deeming as historically significant. So wherever you want to start in terms of stardom, or we'll start with Io Shirai first. That's probably, let's start small and expand from there. Trent, what do you think about Io Shirai in terms of historical significance? I like to describe it as the canon of professional wrestling. Where do you think she sort of sits? How do you think she does for her historical significant case?
If you value women's wrestling, you have to value stardom in the canon of pro wrestling. It's the most significant women's promotion since the golden era of Joshi, and the most significant important modern women's promotion in the world. And it's not really close. There's not a promotion in the Americas in terms of women's wrestling that really comes close to it, or anywhere else. Stardom is number one with a bullet, no one really close. And if you value stardom, then you have to value what Io Shirai did for stardom. all through the drawing power, we talked about how, where if it wasn't for Io Shirai, Stardom probably wouldn't be the position it was. Bushiroad probably wouldn't have valued it enough to have bought them out if Io Shirai hadn't brought them, dragged them to the position where they were. Now, obviously, she left just before she really got to see the growth of that, but the reason she left was because WWE valued her so much to the point that they saw the neck issues, they saw the heart issues, were like, yeah, no, we want her still. Yeah. So if you looking at where Stardom sit, yeah, as long as you value women's wrestling, I think you've got to consider Stardom important to the canon of wrestling. If you want to know where Io Shirai sits in the terms of Stardom's importance, here are some numbers, since you like numbers so much, Ryan.
I do.
She is number one and number two in terms of all-time individual title defenses for their top championship, sitting at 14 and 10, respectively. Total combined defenses for that championship sits at 24, with the second closest being at 10. Combined days as champion for that championship is 1,014, with the second closest being 602. For the number two championship, the Wonder Belt, she still manages to have the most total defenses at 17. And now consider that is the belt that she had when she wasn't busy holding the top championship. Again, she held that championship the second time when they were like, oh, crap, we need someone to be the de facto top champion when Toni Storm was off. And the reason she lost the belt the first time was because they needed to hold the red belt the second time. She also holds the record for the most defenses with a team with the Goddess of Stardom Championship, which is the tag belt, along with Mayu Iwatani, at 11 defenses, and the second longest amount of time with those belts at 407 days, and also has held the Trios title more times than anyone else at six. By all of those metrics, she's also the Grand Slam champion, the first to do it in Stardom. By all of those metrics, she's dominated the Stardom scene. You mentioned, like, you know, in terms of like main eventing and being semi-main event in Stardom, pretty much every year she was there.
She was in practically club. Every single main event, semi-main event, almost of every single show for years.
Yeah. Basically, while she was in Stardom, she was Stardom. She was the ace. She was one third of the three daughters of Stardom. And when she left, like, she left a legacy of people who wanted to be Io Shirai. Azumi wanted to follow in her footsteps. Momo Watanabe wanted to follow in her footsteps. Utami Hayashishita joined Stardom because she wanted to wrestle Io Shirai. And then basically went to Marigold hoping to eventually get that opportunity, which she then got to, you know, enjoy that match and thoroughly get her ass whooped for the honor. Yeah, in terms of her Stardom canon and legacy, there's very few people who really, you know, have the record books. And like, the records she holds are going to be very hard to beat in the modern era, because most people who get close typically retire or start getting overtaken by other people on the roster. It's insurmountable in a lot of ways. These are records that are going to be very hard to beat. So, like, her name's is always going to be at the top.
Yeah, I think that's a great – these are all great points. I think the influence on to other wrestlers is also a very, very strong case for her as well. You know, Scotty, we talked about this on one of the later episodes of Ring Post Radio following All-Star Grand Queendom, where, you know, when you look at the Mount Rushmore, sorry, Trent, for using a U.S. thing. When you look,
I know what Mount Rushmore is.
I figured. When you look at the Mount Rushmore of Stardom, it is easily Io Shirai is on there. I think you and I argued it's also Mayu, it's Tam. Mm-hmm. I think they're fourth. There's some wiggle room a little bit, but those three, I think, are cemented right now. And as we said, she's practically in every single car, every single thing. She has a billion defenses across all these different titles. She is Stardom. That's why I think the comparison of, you know, looking at the historical significance case of Stardom as a promotion, it is almost practically a one-to-one overlap, you know, between Io Shirai and Stardom. Obviously, there's also the extension there of her influence and her significance in the U.S. scene as well, which we can talk about as well. But Scotty, what do you think about her in terms of her historical significance? How good, how bad do you think her case is?
Obviously I think it's good, so don't have to toss bad out there.
Trocon, is that better?
Sure. I think, you know, we had this discussion last year after like the results came out, talking was it Becky?
Yeah.
Right. And we talked about the I don't want to say disrespect, that's a very strong thing to say, but yes. I think the
challenges of a women's wrestler
yes,
in the US scene.
Right. The misunderstanding of it as a whole, truthfully, not just the US scene. I think people try to vote the same way they do with, you know, the men's side of things. And I don't think that's fair, because I don't think that's the same thing. You have to look at it. You have to look at everything under a microscope for the right reasons. And for EO, when you look at women's wrestling over the past 20 years, that is a name at the very top, whether it be in Japan or now America. And I'm happy that Trent brought up those who became wrestlers because of EO and are still becoming wrestlers because of EO. Right? The only three you really hear that from, or four, I should say, these days, are EO, Mayu, and now recently Julia, in terms of Joshi wrestling. Julia is kind of the newer one that people pick from, but those are the three. Those are the three that have a lot of inspiration for young women and wrestler and people who want to become wrestlers. And I think that's very important, because historic significance, or you know, Ryan is right, as in this is going to be the judge for Stardom and the importance moving forward, because as Trent said, if you value women's wrestling and if you see women's wrestling and where it's gotten to, Stardom is at the forefront of that conversation. Everyone will say, obviously, the Four Horsewomen in America, but Stardom, without a doubt, is the conversation starter in Japan. And how do we get there? We get there because of Io Shirai, right? That's how we get to this point. That's how we get to this conversation. And I think that is something that you have to appreciate. If you go into the history of Stardom as a whole, you have to see who was leading the way, who was pushing us forward. And listen, I've had to talk a lot about Stardom's history this week. I've had to talk about 14 years specifically of a certain someone coming in and filling and really taking over what EO had to do for the first 6 years of the company's history. It then moved over to Mayu having to do the same, and now we are looking at it literally days after their biggest attendance ever. And that is so important, because we don't get there without Io Shirai. You don't get there, and you're never gonna get there without Io Shirai, because guess what, it wouldn't exist anymore if there was no Io Shirai. That's just the reality, just like it wouldn't have existed if there was no Mayu Iwatani. That is the facts. I'm sorry, but that's just the truth, because you go back on those cards, who else was going to do it? You know, it's just, that's the reality. And women's wrestling needs a lot of care among the many voting on this panel. I'm not saying I don't respect anyone or anything, but women's wrestling as a whole needs better representation, I think, overall. And when you read the names that are in from women's wrestling, most of them are just from All Japan Women's. And this is now the time that should be changing, whether it be in America or Japan, that should be changing, because we are now in a boom period for women's wrestling. And these are the names that got us there, with Io obviously being the case. You add the historical significance of her in WWE, for example. She is a Japanese wrestler succeeding in WWE. Holy shit, that does not happen. This was the first win at WrestleMania for a Japanese wrestler since Taka Michinoku. Come on, Taka Michinoku. I don't even know what year that was, truthfully. And she's the first Joshi wrestler to ever get a WrestleMania win. These are important things, because she, again, is furthering and putting eyes on women's wrestling, on Joshi wrestling, by being on the biggest stage. And not only being on the biggest stage, but succeeding. She was three years ago, she was coming home. It was over. She did her best. She crushed it in NXT, and that was going to be that. And this would be a whole different conversation. But the moment things changed, she got the call And look at her now. She's went into WrestleMania twice as world champion. She walked out once as successful. She has the highest rated match on a WrestleMania. That's pretty cool. And like I said, she is continuously bringing eyes to Joshi, continuously bringing eyes to Stardom, even when she's not there and hasn't been there for 7 years now. 7 years now, which is pretty crazy. And even the one time she's been in Japan in the past however long, she brought some more eyes for that too, which was pretty cool. So when it comes to historical significance, I think it's her second best claim to fame after the in-ring aspect, which is undeniable. Anyone that does deny it, you're just not watching then. But in terms of historical significance, there's so many different things to bring, and this will be the start of the Stardom conversation that's going to become fascinating over the next decade. There's a reason she's a pillar, guaranteed, locked in, and there's a reason those three, to me, should be, like, I won't fight for really anyone else to make the Hall of Fame from the Stardom legacy panel, or whatever you want to say, but I will fight for these three, because they all did so much to get us here. And that's why women's wrestling is booming. And she's thankfully still part of it, and a big part of it now in America, which is pretty cool too.
Yeah, I think that's all extremely fair. I think I'm trying to remember. I believe Asuka, who came on for the first time last year, and then fell off immediately, which, you know, that's a different conversation for another day. I think part of her case as well is there's a little bit of that historical significance in terms of being a successful Japanese wrestler just there on a U.S. scene first, in a modern sense. But obviously she fell off, so that's not ideal.
She's also in the modern, right?
Yeah,
she was in modern Japan. Not that I don't think that would have helped her much, but still.
Yeah. But she's also vastly different. I think we can both agree that Io Sky outdoes her in the wrestling ability. I think even on a drawing. I'm more bullish, bearish. I forget which was the more down one. But she beats her on that as well. I think being in Japan actually helps her significantly a lot more, because it is a weaker category overall this year, this upcoming year, this upcoming fall. I think especially the legacy aspect of it, I think she's 100% staying on the ballot. She's not falling off immediately. I think 100%. But her, which means that also like her legacy aspect of this is only going to evolve more. I think she has a really solid legacy case in terms of Japanese women's scene. I'm fascinated to see how that can or couldn't develop in the U.S. You can maybe argue Julia as another person coming over into the WWE system. I guess you can say that. But with Io Sky on top and, you know, cream always rising to the top, I'm fascinated to see how much more of that legacy case can be developed for her on a U.S. level. And even if she comes back to Japan here and there, hopefully for the next however long,
I'll confidently say this: she's not falling off the bracket.
Yeah, no, I don't think she is.
I'll confidently say that. And if she does, then everyone should be ashamed. based on who's in the Japan section, everyone should legitimately be ashamed.
Well, speaking of, in the private chat here on StreamYard, I did the formatting a little bit different. Let's see if it messed up. It messed up. Of course it did. I put in the current currently believed to be the Japanese bracket. Every once in a while, obviously, if someone passes away, Dave will add them to the ballot, you know, if they're significant or there's enough of a case, maybe.
WWE.
Yeah. So I'll be fascinated to see if there's any more people. I think, like, if anything, I could see Dave maybe adding Osamu Nishimura. I don't know how strong of a case that would be, but I wouldn't be shocked if I say that since he goes on it. But if he went on it, that makes it 12 votes. Sorry, 12 acts, which make it four votes. So that's more interesting. But anyways, so Japan is 11 acts, which means you get three votes in this category. The people currently listed here in the Japan region are Hayabusa, the tag team of Toyota and Yamada, Yoshiaki Fujiwara, Yoshihiro Takayama, Tiger Jeet Singh, Mako Satomura, the tag team of Inoki and Sakaguchi, the tag team of Kojima and Tenzan, Zack Sabre Jr., of course, Io Shirai, and Masaki Mochizuki. So you guys have a little bit to look over that. Scotty, I know for a fact you are a voter for the Hall of Fame. Where are you sort of
right now?
You're looking for your ballot right now. Yeah. Oh, then should I give you some time? Do you want to do a little bit of time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, then Trent,
I'll have it in 2 seconds.
Perfect. Trent, you got no time whatsoever. What do you think looking at this ballot? You got 3 votes. Who are you sort of leaning towards? Possibly. I don't know if you have a ballot, but presumably, let's say you have a ballot. Who are the 3 votes you're going to go for? Up to 3 votes.
Yeah. If I was important enough to have a ballot, I would give a vote to Hayabusa. I would definitely be giving a vote to Io Sky, Io Shirai, based on this list. And as for my third pick, I would either see, I'm torn between giving it to Mako Satomura or the team of Toyota and Yamada. The coin flip between those two.
What are sort of the cases for both of those acts? What are you sort of leaning, flip-flopping between?
Whole other episode.
Well, I mean, Toyota and Yamada definitely has the, I would say, probably way more on the drawing power, obviously. I would give probably Satomura a better wrestling ability overall, but legacy is kind of a bit of a even split at the moment because Satomura has influenced so many people, especially modern. That's where it's kind of a bit of a, and because Toyota, I think, has influenced more people individually than that specific tag team. Mm. So I guess I would probably give it to Satomura as the individual pick there.
There's always the tough team of tag teams, and that's part of the reason why their tag team is Toyota's already in. So it's like Dave's like, what's her best tag team or whatever?
Sure.
And so it's, that's always the sort of thing. Same thing of like Inoki and Sakaguchi.
That's an all-time great tag team, to be fair. That is a lot of
classic. That's what makes it so difficult. Like, it's not like it's just some throw to give a tag team.
Sure. Yes. Right. Yes.
One of the all-time great tag teams. When they were going, they didn't have a long run. That's what hurts them, and that's I know I listened to a lot of the conversations about it, but I do think they'll get in, for example, at 42.6%, especially with what's added. I don't see them getting hurt too much. So last year it was Shingo, Mako, and the tag team. So real shock. I know.
Tag team of Yamada and Toyota.
Yes. So I just keep those two and add you.
I'm going the all Joshi bracket? All Joshi?
Yeah. Why do I have a vote if I'm not doing the right thing? You know? And I think recency bias will help one of them a lot, especially, you know, with just retiring and so on. So I think that'll be interesting this year, too, to see maybe people kind of now have a full scope of what she's done. The 22%, that's actually better than I thought. So that's good for her, and like Trent said, I think there's definitely more inspiration there now, in terms of her. Looking at all these, I mean, the only person I'd switch out would be, I would reconsider Hayabusa for one of the two, just like Trent was. But at the same time, admittedly, the way I vote is like I try to also consider who will get the proper amount of votes. And then, like, if you're a slam dunk, you're getting my vote because this is why I'm supposed to be voting. Mm-hmm. But if I'm 50-50 and I think someone's going to get less votes, I probably am going to vote for them because I don't want them to fall off the bracket because I think they're a great conversation. Sure. So that's why I'd probably more favor Mako over Hayabusa for that discussion. And then EO, honestly, I look at this lineup, I don't think anyone has a better case.
Oh, really? You think she's besides, the best case of this lineup?
I do. I legitimately do. If you're having me pick who the best wrestler on, people know how I feel, but my Naomi Toyota. If I'm picking who the best wrestler here is, it's EO. So, like, and fucking Tomohiro Ishizen. So, like, What else do I need to say? I'm going to use that as my excuse until
Legitimately, I don't think that's a terrible excuse, because I think Ishii going in really opens up the pathway for work rate cases being, you know, strongly looked at. But then obviously, like I said, the top, I think I said that on top of the Japanese region, like all of the New Japan people, have pretty much all gone in. And with Shima and Shingo, obviously a New Japan person, but obviously still a Dragon Gate person.
Of course.
That has like opened the door more for like those Dragon Gate drew better, I believe, than Stardom, but like still like smaller promotions, minor, let's say, promotions in Japan at the time. You can also see that with the inclusion of Masaki Mochizuki on the ballot. Like we're starting to move into that scope of like the smaller promotions and the cream of the crop, and seeing if any of those people going in. And I think like as the years go on, like Mayu is obviously going the ballot. Dave has said that he thinks that Mayu has an even stronger case than Io.
I always knew I liked Dave.
Like I said before, I think Tam Nakano could eventually also be on this ballot. Like we're gonna start opening up the ballot.
That would be modern Joshi. Fascinating conversation.
It will be a fascinating conversation whenever that happens. I don't know when.
So that's legitimately just a 5-year peak.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, but it's as strong as any in terms of just the drawing alone. You know, so that will be a fun one. Not that I need to talk about her anymore this week. I've done enough. I've done enough for a couple months. But no, I like this list because it gives me optimism, which I think is important. And honestly, if you show me this beforehand, I would have felt even greater going into the conversation, because it's like maybe only Hayabusa is gonna get the edge from most voters. I hope. I mean, if not, then we're gonna have to talk.
And also, like, two people going in last year opens up a lot more votes for a lot of people in the Japanese region.
Absolutely. And all of them have their different paths. But like I said, I think she's the best in ring. And again, gonna bring it up one more time for the pop. Ishii's in. I mean, I could say Kota Ibushi too. Talk about a guy that got in at the right time. A few years later, we'd be like,
"Are you sure about this one?
Sure about that one?" But yeah, like they opened the door for this, right? That's the voters have opened the door for work rate to be the powerful force behind any wrestler moving forward,
which is fun, because it's like the, I don't know about the most subjective one.
Oh, but absolutely. It's
extremely subjective.
Yeah. I mean, legacy is like, if you have to do more research for that, you know,
drawing is pure numbers at the end of the day.
Right. Pure numbers for most people. Again, I always think Japan drawing is unique, as is, because once you get past New Japan, then it's a conversation. When you're in New Japan, it's like, oh, it's, wow, you did great. You're Okada. Good job. Like, fuck. But like, that
sounds like Okada slander, but I'm not.
No, sure. It's not. It's legitimately not Okada slander. But like, I mean, Kenny Omega got in when he was like still in his peak run in New Japan.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Like, what?
I mean, that's a problem with putting people in who are still active as a rule. Like, it's always.
This is true. But like, I'm going to defend Io and I'm going to defend Mayu till the day I die. So if I'm not going to do it now, when am I going to do it? So
I'm right there standing with you, buddy.
I know. I've done 15 hours of podcasting this week, and about 13 of them have been about Mayu Iwatani. So what do you want from me? But in all seriousness, you look at this lineup. I don't think Zach helped himself.
Yeah,
this year at all.
Yeah.
Right. That was kind of the make or break thing everyone was talking about at the time, and he had just gotten the world title, and then
it's kind of like, all right,
let's give it to Goto, something they didn't want to do for 15 years. So that's what Zach did. No, I'm not going to rip everyone on here, but yeah, I think Hayabusa is getting
the roast of the Japan region.
Oh yeah, I mean. You want to talk about Toyota? I'm just kidding. She's in the Hall of Fame already. I don't have to talk about her. And I just said I'd vote for them. But in all seriousness, I am fascinated to see where this goes this year. I think the Japan region's very fun because it's obviously a lot of people I've seen in real time too, which is pretty cool for me.
You grew up watching Inoki, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just in the form of Sari. Sorry, it was right there. I had to. Inokiism lives on in Sariism.
I remember when Inoki had the brown bob cut hairdo.
Remember when Inoki went overseas and had that like sun goddess gimmick? That was so
Yeah. Inoki was a
schoolgirl outfit.
Yeah.
Listen. Inoki wishes he had the tracksuit. Okay. He wishes he had that tracksuit. Because I do too. The amount of
glasses.
I don't know how listeners are, but can someone draw Antonio Inoki as NXT Suri?
Oh dear God!
To be fair, anyway. Vince would have given Inoki that gimmick.
Yeah, you're probably right. But anyways, maybe that supports Io more. She fought through all that bullshit. Anyways, get me out of here. I'm done. I'm gonna get myself in trouble.
I'll give you guys a last chance. Fight arguments, closing statement, let's say, for Io Shirai, and I guess plugs if you got them. Trent, we'll start with you. What are your closing thoughts on Io Shirai and her case?
She will go down as legitimately perhaps the best women's wrestler of all time. You can make an argument for that. Definitely within the past 20 years, one of the most naturally gifted athletes to enter a wrestling ring, held down the fort for Stardom and basically got them in the position to be where they are now. Arguably the most successful transitional athlete from Japan to America. She did more in Japan than Asuka did and has done more in America than Nakamura has done. And that alone, like, you could make the argument for
pure success. Also in the Hall of Fame. Nakamura.
There you go.
I'll throw in Okada as well.
Yeah, she's better than him too.
Yeah. So you know, just in terms of everything she's done, like the way the Observer sort of puts Hall of Fame value in, she gets in purely on in-ring ability. I think could make an argument for getting in on legacy, even though she's still active and is only 34 and probably has minimum another 6 years of in-ring wrestling to go, providing she doesn't have some kind of career destabilizing injury. Obviously, drawing power isn't quite to the level that some people would want, but I don't think that harms her anywhere near enough to stop her getting in. I see no reason why she shouldn't be getting in comfortably in the first year.
Fun fact, by the time this episode comes out, she will be 35. Her birthday's on the 8th.
Happy birthday.
She'll be a week into her 35th
happy
year.
Birthday, EO. I hope the King of Darkness comes through.
Scotty, closing statements, plugs, if you got them.
Yeah, of course. I have no plugs. No, I'm just kidding. I'll do that at the end. Okay.
And give me your match of the week as well, if you don't mind. Go ahead.
I'll just guess it ahead of time. Anyway, because the 8th, you said this coming out?
No, it's coming on the Wednesday after the 8th, whatever that is, math calendar wise.
So that's even further away.
Yes, so this comes out the
14th. Totally outdated. You had to pick the week that I did. 14 and whatever. Anyways, let me talk about Io. Io Shirai, to what Trent said, will go down as one of the all-time greats in the ring, undoubtedly. In my opinion, whether it's women's wrestling, whether it's all wrestling, I just think that is her case alone. Naturally gifted, yes. Naturally charismatic, yes. And someone who paved the way for where women's wrestling is today in Japan. I think that alone helps her case as well. She paved a path that so many people quote her on and talk, you know, anytime you ask someone about Stardom's history and Io, they'll always give her flowers because of what she did, right? And what she's continuing to do for Japanese wrestlers in America. You guys brought it up, so I'm just using the fuel you gave. More successful than Okada in America. More successful than Nakamura in America. More successful than Asuka in America. You get the point. You know, one of them, Io has become Io, in America. The other one has become, as Chris Charlton said, a meme. He said it, not me. He said it about Okada, not me. You know, he's a joke. I'm just using quotes here. He got suspended. tough. But in all actuality, when it comes to EO, there is very few wrestlers I'm going to go out of my way to defend in a conversation like this wholeheartedly and legitimately put care and emphasis into it. She is one of them. And as she continues to put eyes on Joshi, as she continues to put eyes on the greatness of Joshi wrestling, as far as I'm concerned, she's still just building that significance. Like you said, she's 34, going to be 35 by the time this comes out. She's far from done. She's having some people believe this is her peak now, which is, again, crazy because I thought we were done with the peak of EO, right? Like, when she got to America, it's like, oh, yeah, she can calm down, take things a lot easier, which she did for some parts. But now she's going out there as the world champion, as someone people recognize as one of the top stars in the WWE. That goes a long way. If you got a vote, I think you should be using on EO for the Japan region. I got my jokes in because if I don't get my jokes in, is it a podcast with me? No. so I got to do it, especially when some of the people we named are already in the Hall of Fame. In all seriousness, I do think Okada is a Hall of Famer. I just want that to be known. I don't want people to be like, "Are you?" No, I do think he is. But again,
best person from Japan to do the Rainmaker after Mariah.
Yeah, you're damn right. I mean, comparatively now, it's not even a competition. But stop getting me in trouble, Trent. Anyways, everyone, please, like, listen to what me and Trent said. Go listen to Stardom Road episodes because we talked a lot about EO and her legacy and what the Mayu rivalry helped with the company. It's the rivalry that still is most remembered in Stardom. Now, Tam and Julia is probably the most recent one to join that. I don't think Tam and Saya Kamatani will, but we'll see. We'll see what the Tam fans make me believe. Anyways,
I'll put links plugs to those Stardom Road episodes in the link down below.
Yes, you will. It's going to be a fascinating case all year. I think, again, her in-ring gets her there. Her historical significance gets her there. You can talk about the other two all you want. I mean, promos, you know, I don't know how many people take the promos fully into account.
It's like a sub. I almost Japanese. Consider like a subcategory to working.
Right. Because a lot of the voters obviously are, as far as I know, I would guess most of them don't speak Japanese, but I'm not going to assume. But anyways, let me do my plugs now, please. YouTube.com/@ScottEWrestling. You can see all my YouTube content. Since this is coming out and so far in the future, hopefully I've slowed down because boy, oh boy, am I tired right now. I definitely have it. Let's not. Honestly, there might be a Tam Nakano legacy video out by the time this is out. So check that out. That's the plan. There's also hopefully a beginner's guide to Marigold. You might want to check that out as well, because putting things together for the good people around the world that are obviously very hyped about Joshi right now, talking about Joshi right now, that's what I'm here to do. So one last time, shout out to Io Shirai. If you are more likely to vote for her, if I say Io Sky, too bad. I'm still going to say Io Shirai. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Perfect. I think that could not have been summed up perfectly. Trent, as well, I know you've backed off the internet, but I will also have a link to your wrestling article about the Mayu Io Shirai. I guess if there's any other articles you want me to put in there, but I'll definitely have that one in the link dump as well.
Thank you.
That is it for this week's episode, this month's episode of The Ballot. We appreciate everybody for listening in to the case that is Io Shirai. I guess until next month, enjoy your month of wrestling, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the latest episode of The Ballot. Again, I want to thank my guests, Scott Edwards and Trent Brayward, for coming on and talking all about Io Shirai and Io Sky. One of the same, as it were. Again, we are part of the Count Out Network, Wrestling Podcast Network. So you can support that by following them on social media at CountOutPod, wherever you get social media. Subscribe to The Ballot, leave a review, leave a 5-star review. It greatly helps us out. And I wanted to come in here real quickly at the very end to just say, look, you don't have to wait that long for another episode. You know, obviously due to circumstances surrounding the ballot or surrounding, you know, the impending Hall of Fame ballot this year, with the passing of Sabu, it looks very likely, according to Dave, that Sabu is probably going to be on the ballot. And when I say probable, I mean it's, you know, 99% happening, I guess. So Sabu is going on the ballot. He has been on the ballot before, but with the nature of his passing, I don't know what it was specifically, but I felt it would be appropriate, despite not being a newcomer on the ballot, to still try and do some sort of conversation piece regarding Sabu. So next week, there will be another bonus episode for the ballot regarding Sabu. It's going to be a different format. I'm not going to be joined by one guest, but in fact, I guess in a way, joined by several guests. It's going to be sort of a montage, a collage of audio from various past guests, hopeful future guests, you know, people I sort of respect in the industry, people that I know are fans of Sabu. Coming on and giving their thoughts on Sabu, give their thoughts on his Hall of Fame case, and sort of, you know, lay that out there now that obviously, sadly, Sabu has passed on. So, yep, next week there will be a bonus episode, a different sort of format. I'm trying out this format. I think it's an interesting idea for those that are returning, perhaps. So maybe there's an idea there. I don't know. We'll find out how successful it is next week on The Ballot, talking all about Sabu. All right, thank you again for listening to the show, and we will see you next week. Goodbye, everybody. This has been a Countout Podcast.
Have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Hewson. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.
Don't miss the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. You'll find the Maytag appliances you need when you need them at a great price. Plus, when you buy two select laundry appliances, you'll get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop Maytag at Lowe's. We help, you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.